Jnanti-midandasya Jnananjana-chalakaya Chakshurun-militam jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadati Svapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Juta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpatadubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare I am very much honored and grateful to be amongst all of you this evening in this beautiful environment. Thank you, Alina and Nikhil, for giving me this opportunity to be with you. Can I speak some story for the children first, and then after that begin? After this story, the lecture may be boring, so you may go anywhere you like. Hari Hari. Tomorrow we are celebrating Ram Navami. Do you know what is Ram Navami? It is the day that Ram was born in this world, long ago. So one time, there was a businessman who was very busy doing business. And he approached his guru, and his guru told him how he should perform his puja and chant the holy names and read the scriptures. And the businessman said, "But I have no time for all of this. I'm too busy." So his guru said, "Well, let me see your schedule, and then we'll try to work out a time." So he wrote down his whole schedule. From early morning till late at night, he was a very busy man. So his guru said, "It seems like the only time you can chant God's name is when you are on the toilet. You can't say you're too busy then. So every time you go on the toilet, you chant God's name." Now it is said that wherever anyone chants the name of Ram, Hanuman immediately comes to that place. Because Ram is none different than his name, and Hanuman made a vow that I will always be wherever you are, Ram. So anyone who chants your name, I will be there. So when this man was on the toilet, this businessman, chanting the name of Ram, Hanuman was very much angry at him. The man didn't see Hanuman. Hanuman came in an invisible way. And Hanuman was thinking, what nonsense? He's chanting my God's name on the toilet? And Hanuman slapped him in the face, very hard. And the man didn't know what happened. All of a sudden, he was slapped by somebody invisible. So he went back to his guru, and he said, I was chanting the name of Ram on the toilet, as you said, and something slapped me in the face. Look, look at my face. It's all red. So the guru said, let me go into meditation and try to understand what happened to you. So he went into meditation, and his meditation, he could see the abode of Ram in Vaikuntha. And Ram was sitting on his throne with Lakshman, Bharat, Shatrughna, and Sita Devi. And Hanuman came. And Hanuman said, my lord, I have something to report to you. This Kali Yuga is really bad. It's really terrible. I saw this businessman, and the only time he gives to chant your name was when he's on a toilet. He said, but I could not tolerate it. I slapped him in the face. Ram was looking at the floor. And then he looked up, and Hanuman, what happened to you? He saw that there was a big red mark on Lord Ramchandra's face. He said, what happened, my lord? And Ram said, this is Kali Yuga. A devotee slapped me in the face. Hanuman said, tell me who it is. I will punish him. I will destroy him. What devotee will slap my Lord Ram in the face? Tell me where he is, who he is. I will punish. Ram said, it was you, Hanuman. Hanuman said, me? He started crying. I would never slap you in the face. How you say like this? He said, don't you know, Hanumanji? I'm none different than my name. When that man was chanting, I was dancing on his tongue, and when you slapped, you hit me. You should know that there are no hard and fast rules for the chanting of God's names. There's a beautiful verse, Nam Nam Akari Bahudan Nija Sarva Shaktis, that the Lord is none different than his name, and there are no hard and fast rules. We could chant anywhere, everywhere, all times, and access the Lord if we chant sincerely. Now I will begin talk. Thank you. Just a few days ago, I was in the Himalayas, in the foothills in Rishikesh. I was sitting on a rock in the middle of the Ganga with the very beautiful crystal waters of the Ganges coming down from Gangotri and Badrinath, meeting at Devprayag and flowing by me. It was a beautiful day. The waves of Mother Ganga were rippling and swirling, creating the most magnificent designs at every moment. No human artist could ever capture even 1 second of the Ganga's beautiful waves. And there's unlimited such waves at every moment. But as soon as the art is created, immediately it disappears. And then something new is created, and it disappears. I was meditating how nature is like Mother Ganga. At every moment, there's a wonderful creation, and yet at every moment, there's a transformation. Nothing remains stable. Everything is temporary. By the power of time, Sripad Shankaracharya explained that this body is like a beautiful candle. A candle is very nice, but the flame represents time. And the candle has to melt in due course. Nature is permanent, like the current of the Ganga, but all manifestations of her are constantly changing. I looked up at the Himalayas. Each tree looked like an antenna, just emitting spiritual energy to purify the world. If we can just tune in. There are so many energies in this world. Everybody is like an antenna, actually, emitting their desires, their actions. And according to what we tune into is what we're going to be affected by. If we tune into God, we become purified. If we tune into Tamaguna or Rajaguna, we become affected by that. Living in Bombay, there are many frequencies. Yes? Many, many frequencies. But like a television, when I was young, living in a village outside of Chicago, we consider ourselves very proud because we had 4 television stations. But today, some televisions have 200 stations. And it's amazing how as soon as you turn to the station, you get a cricket game, and then you switch, and immediately you're tuned in and you see the news in Iraq. And then you turn it again and you see some soap opera. According to what you turn into, you access. So life is like that. According to what we decide by our free will to tune into, that's going to be our reality and that's how we're going to be affected. If we tune in to the Lord through our meditation, through satsang, through God's name, then the Lord manifests within our heart, and we become purified by that experience. Then I looked into the sky. It's very, very beautiful. And just a little ways away from me, there was some sewage flowing into Ganga. And I was trying to learn from that. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a story of a king who met this man who was just laying on the ground. But he looked so effulgent. The king asked him, "Who are you and who is your guru?" He said, "I have so many gurus. The mountain, the moon, the river, the insects, everywhere I go, God is speaking to me, teaching me lessons. If we just tune in, properly. If we want to seek wisdom, we can find it everywhere." So the sewage was coming into Ganga. And I was thinking that the Ganga is like our consciousness. The sewage is not the Ganga. It's just mixed in the Ganga. Ganga is completely pure. Like any river from its source. But all the pollution that's in it is something else that's mixed with it. And when it's polluted, if we filter that water, we separate what is not Ganga from what is Ganga. And in the filter is all the pollution. And then we have again the pure Ganges water. So it is said in the scripture, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunai Sravanadi Sudhichiti Koriye Yudhoi. That pure love of God, Prema Bhakti, is within the heart of everyone. It is our nature. It is our essence. The body, the mind, the ego are like different types of dresses. The body is like the external dress. The mind is like the underwear. You can't see it, but it's very much there. But na jayate mriyate vakata chit na yan putva bhavata vanavuya ajo nitya shashvato yam purano na hanyate hanyamane sarire. Sri Bhagavad Gita teaches the body is like a chariot. The mind is like the charioteer. I'm sorry, the mind is like the intelligence. The intelligence is like the charioteer. And the mind is like the reins, the ropes, and the five senses are like horses. But the driver is the soul. We are that soul. Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Krishna says in Gita, mamayvam so jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana, that we are all part of God. Just like the sun, its quality is to give light and heat. And every little sun ray also emanates light and heat, exactly like the sun. But the sun ray is the part. The sun is the whole from which everything emanates. So we are godly. We are divine by nature, eternal, full of happiness and full of love. But why are we not enjoying that? Because of so many artificial pollutions. Lust, envy, anger, pride, greed, illusion. They have somehow or other polluted the current of our consciousness. But spiritual life is the process of filtering our consciousness, bringing it back to its original, natural, pure state. So as I was thinking like this, I was looking up at the sky, and I saw a hawk. Do you know hawks? Big birds? Very big birds. There were so many other birds that were winging around, little ones, but way, way above it was this hawk. His wings were spread, and he had the confidence of the emperor of the skyways, just soaring. I saw him hovering lower and lower and lower and lower, until he was only a few yards over my head. His reddish-brown feathers were glistening in the sun, and his green eyes were sparkling, scanning the river very carefully. Suddenly, he just lunged right into the Ganga, went underwater for a moment, and then emerged, and in his claws, his talons, there was a fish, about 1 foot long. That little fish was squirming, completely in culture shock. I was thinking that that little fish has never known anything in its whole life except living in a river. And those kind of fish, they travel in schools with dozens and dozens and dozens of other fish who, since their birth, they've grown up with, their family, their friends, their society. That little fish, just like any other day, was routinely swimming in the river when suddenly the hawk took it out of its entire environment into the air where it couldn't breathe. Its grips, about to be eaten. I was thinking how much we are all like that fish. In the Mahabharata, a yaksha asked Maharaj Yudhisthira a question. What is the most wonderful thing that you have found in all the world? Maharaj Yudhisthira replied, the most wonderful thing I have seen is everyone sees so many people, they die. But everyone is thinking, it's not going to happen to me, at least not nearby. But like that little fish, anybody, at any moment, the hawk of fate can rip us right out of the current of our routine, of our normal lifestyle. Through disease, crisis, tragedy, or even death. Now, this story is not to make us pessimistic about life. It's meant to make us realistic about life. And the lesson I learned from this, while sitting on that rock on the bank of the Ganges, is we should not be complacent. We should not just fall into our routines. We should understand what is the purpose of life, what is the ideal of life. And we should make that a priority in which we integrate all other aspects of our life. Because we do not know when that hawk may strike. But we do know that hawk is watching us, scanning the river of our routine life. Just recently, I was speaking to someone with this crisis of the financial market in Wall Street. All of a sudden, his business, everything just fell apart practically. Very, very difficult. Struggle like he never saw before. Material nature, things are beyond our control. But Krishna explains in Gita, Vishayava nivartante niraharasya dvarvina ras paramdrisva nivartate, which means that if we experience a higher taste, a higher principle, we can be above all the inevitable changes that come in life. But this complacency, Krishna explains, is one of the greatest impediments for spiritual progress. And especially for grihasthas or householders who are living in this world, with professional occupations and their duties, family duties, social duties. But we also have our spiritual duties. Everything is being given to us by God, and to reciprocate with that. It is explained, the first aphorism of Vedanta Sutra, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Real human life begins when we sincerely aspire to understand who I am, where am I coming from, and what is my real purpose. If I am the soul, then what is the duty of the soul? In Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Parikshit was cursed to die in 7 days. Can you imagine? He was a king with a wonderful family. He was young. He had tremendous wealth, power, everything. But he learned he was going to die in 7 days. He went to the river Ganges to associate with holy people. And he asked them 3 questions. the most important things that he considered in his life at this time. What is the prime duty for every human being? What is the essence of religion? There are so many religious systems, and so many people fight over the external, superficial aspects of religion. What is the name of God? There is one God. I have so many names. God can have so many names. Some people call me Swami. Some people call me Radhanath. My father calls me Richard. When I walk down the street in some college town, some people call me names that I'm not going to say in this very distinguished assembly. So whether you call the sun Surya, or sun, or soul, it's the same sun. But people could fight, hate, declare wars on the basis of these differences. Parikshit Maharaj asked this question, what is the essence of all religion? Because I only have 7 days. I have no time to study all Vedas and Puranas and Mahabharatas and Ramayans and all of that. I have 7 days. Tell me the essence, what I need to know. And all the sages requested Shukadev Goswami, a 16-year-old boy, to speak. And his words composed of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the third question that Parikshit Maharaj asked was, what are the duties of a person who's about to die? Parikshit knew he had 7 days. There is no one in this entire world that knows for sure that we even have that. Very important question. And when we understand that all of these duties we have must be met, our intelligence is based on how we balance our domestic family life, our occupational duties, our social duties, and our spiritual duties. The tendency is we neglect our spiritual duties. Or we do it really quickly. Or we do it just as a formality. Why? Because I don't see tangible results. When I work, I see money coming. When I do social obligations, I see relationships building for various lucrative purposes. When I perform my religious life, I may feel a little peace, but I don't see tangible results. But it's our foundation. As we were speaking to those Young Presidents Association, wonderful people, foundation is all important. Just like this building, we can see the whole of Bombay, it's so high. Now, Elena, Nikhil, when people come to your house, I'm sure people must compliment the beautiful terrace, the wonderful decorations of the rooms, the paintings, the glasswork, the furniture. But how many people have come to your house and exclaimed, your house has a magnificent foundation? No, you don't see it. But what if the foundation is weak? Hare Krishna. Everything collapses. Nothing stands. The foundation is the most important part of the house. What can't be seen is holding up everything being seen. The integrity we live, our connection to God, and the cultivation of developing that relationship is foundational in our life. Unless we have deep spiritual roots, then we can even easily give up our integrity. All our peace of mind could collapse just by some incident, some storm, anxiety, stress. There are many workshops in stress management. Yes? They're very good. But really, if your foundation is strong, then no matter how many storms come, your peace of mind, your integrity, your faith, your happiness will stand. But if you don't have that strong foundation, then when the storms come, so much stress, so much anxiety, you start hurting even the people you love. So yes, Bhagavad Gita is very practical. Bhagavad Gita was spoken on a battlefield. Arjuna was not a Brahmin. He was a warrior. He was not a Swami. He had three wives and many children. And he wanted to leave the battlefield to go to Himalayas and sit on a rock and meditate probably. But Krishna said, no, that is not your duty. You must perform your duty. Now some people, they declare that Bhagavad Gita means perform your duty. If that's all it meant, Krishna could have spoken the Gita in one sloka, perform your duty. What were the other 699 slokas about? The consciousness in which you should perform your duty. To develop that deep foundation of our connection to our own soul and God, which is the source of our real happiness and the source by which we can give real happiness to others. Relationships are very difficult to maintain in this age of Kali unless we come together on a higher principle. Because there's Kali means the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. It's not sometimes, it's all the time. It's just there, like the hawk, to grab us. Unless in our own consciousness and in our relationships we could unite with God, with ourselves, and with others on a higher platform. That's what spiritual life is. That's Sanatana Dharma. So Krishna tells Arjuna, you fight, but fight in complete absorption in remembering your relationship with me and my will. Krishna is the Supreme Father. In Ramayana, Lord Ramchandra, he exhibited the qualities of an ideal human being to teach us how to be ideal human beings. When Dasarath Maharaj was in that predicament due to Kaikeyi, where he had to exile Ram to the forest for 14 years, Ram gladly accepted it. You are my father. This is your will. Executing your will is my happiness. Bhagavan says, Aham Bija Pratapita, I am the supreme father of all living beings. So as I was sitting on that little rock, I was thinking like this. How important it is to make our priorities. If we don't, with determination, understand what is our real purpose, what is our real happiness, what is the greatest thing we could give to our children and to society, then we're definitely going to be distracted. 100%, we must be distracted. It's material nature's dharma to distract us. But Sanatan Dharma is to make our priorities in such a way that we will not be distracted. And we can dynamically raise our children, raise our families, perform our occupation, but connected to the essence of our own life, our soul, and God. Many impediments will come. While I was sitting on that rock in the Ganges, I hope you don't mind me telling these Ganges stories. I was meditating on how the Ganga's flowing, always flowing toward the sea, never any other direction. She's always flowing toward the sea. But there are so many impediments. Huge rocks, gigantic rocks, hundreds of tons. Somehow or other, she'll go under or over or around. Big mountains, Himalayan mountains, are in her path. Somehow or other, she'll find her way around to reach the sea. Nothing can stop her. And I was remembering a prayer of Queen Kunti, the mother of Pandavas, from Srimad Bhagavat. Twai me nonya vishayo matir madhupate sukrit ratim udvahatat adha gange vogam udanvati. She's praying, oh my sweet Lord, as the river Ganges for continuously flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be forever drawn to you without allowing anything or anyone else to divert it. This was her prayer. If in the current of our life, spiritual or any aspiration, it culminates in our spiritual ideals, but in any aspiration of life, there will be impediments. There will be obstacles. Whether it's political, or whether it's in our business, or whether it's our family relationships, or whether it's in our spiritual life, there will be so many obstacles. Some will be small, some will be formidable. But Krishna tells in Gita that determination is necessary. Like the Ganges, her determination. Somehow or other, if we have that determination, we must be willing to get around all obstacles and never, ever give up. As it is said, we know the saying, failure is stepping stone to success. Thomas Edison, who actually lived not far from where I lived, he was from Ohio, I was from Illinois, it's the next state. Thomas Edison, he was trying to invent a battery. He failed about 900 times. So a newspaper reporter asked him, aren't you discouraged? You failed 900 times? He said, no, I'm very encouraged. Everything's going just right. So what do you mean? He said, I have learned 900 ways it doesn't work. So I'm 900 ways closer to finding how it does work. You can see the empty part of a half glass of water, or you could see how it's half full. A successful person in any line is always seeing every situation as an opportunity. And sometimes reversals, failures, are the best opportunities. I was speaking in a chapter of Alcoholics Anonymous some time ago. And someone was telling me about what a blessing it was to be an alcoholic. I asked, can you explain? He said, yes, it was such a blessing. Because only an alcoholic can understand what another alcoholic is going through. So now I've given it up. But I could be an instrument of God's grace to help other people give it up. If I didn't go through it myself, I could never reach them. And I have helped dozens and dozens of people giving up alcohol. So what a blessing that I have that wisdom. But it wasn't easily earned. And please, don't follow in his footsteps. But we can understand the principle that even our difficulties, even in relationships. I remember when I was a little boy. If you don't mind personal stories. I was about 8 years old. And I was sitting in my mother and father's bedroom. And my father was at work. And my mother, she had her mirror and she had all her cosmetics. And she was putting something on her eyelashes. What is that called?
Mascara.
Mascara, yes. She was going like this. And as she was putting it on, she was very grave. She said, little Richie, I'm sorry to tell you this, but your father and I, everyone loves your father. Everyone loves me, but we don't get along with each other. So we're probably going to separate. An 8-year-old child hearing that? I didn't say a word, but I cried. And when she saw me crying, she started crying. So I left the room. When my father came home, he came into the room. My mother said, I have something very serious to talk to you about. And they closed the door. And I was very interested. They don't know this. It's a secret. But today I will reveal my secret. I opened the door a little crack and put my ear right in that crack. Because I wanted to hear what they were speaking. And my mother said, I told our son about our plan and he started to cry. And then I saw my father cry. And my mother and father said, for the sake of the children, no matter what, we'll never fight in front of them, and we will stay together till we die. And when my mother passed away, they had just celebrated their 58th wedding anniversary, which is quite rare in America. A higher principle. When we have a higher principle, it could resolve the problems. Because that higher principle is foundational. It is said in Vedanta Sutra, Brahma Sutra, Anandamayo Bhyashat, which means every living being is seeking pleasure. That's the basis of what everyone does. Seek pleasure. And we try to avoid pain because it interferes with our pleasure. The little ant is looking for pleasure. The mosquito, when he's biting you, he really doesn't mean any harm. He doesn't even know he's causing harm. He's just looking for pleasure. And it just so happens that you are the object of his pleasure. And every human being, whether they're black or yellow or white or dark or light or man or woman, or whether they're Eastern or Western or rich or poor or educated or uneducated, everyone is looking for pleasure. Why do we all have that in common? Every species, wherever there's life. Because it's our inseparable nature. The soul, being part of God, is always seeking pleasure because we are such an ananda. But even in this world, we understand there is no higher pleasure than love. So many forms of success or acquisition can give some pleasure to the mind and to the senses, but only love can give pleasure to the heart. And the heart is the throne in which the soul is seated. Just like a little child. You can give a child, I saw in America, I visited an old friend, and actually it was his son and his daughter-in-law. They had a basement for their children. And they had thousands and thousands of dollars worth of toys and games and everything else. But they were always working. And I said, are your children happy? They said, no. No matter what we give them, our children tell us, all we want is your love. We want to be loved by you. Give us the time by which we know we're loved by you. Little children are saying this. It is our nature. We need to be loved. Why? Because the soul's nature is to feel God's love. The soul's nature is to love God. And where there is love of God, there is love for every living being, because we see every living being as part of God. And in that love of God, there is compassion for other living beings. That is the perfection of human life. That is real happiness. And in whatever occupation, Bhagavad Gita explains, whatever field of life, whether we're swamis or whether we're presidents of countries or whether we're teachers or housewives or students, if we make a priority to strive to realize that essence of love within us, then we can experience real fulfillment. Real happiness, life. In this age of Kali, the chanting of God's name is declared by the Vedic scriptures to be the most powerful medicine to filter our consciousness and bring it back to its original natural state. Cheto darpanam arjanam bhava mahadevagni nirvapanam. This chanting of the Lord's names, and the Lord has many names, it filters our consciousness. It cleans the mirror of our heart. When a mirror is covered by dust, all you see is dust. But when you clean the dust, you see yourself. If we give time to cultivate our spirituality by chanting God's name, different forms of meditation and yoga can bring physical health and peaceful mind, and even can bring up to the point of mukti or liberation. But in the age of Kali, the scriptures say, it is the name of God that actually awakens the innate divine love that is within us. And anyone could do it. Little children, they love to dance and sing. And even big children. It's so simple. And as we heard in that story, you could even chant in the toilet. And Lord Ram will protect you from Hanuman. After Hanuman learned that lesson, even he will be there to protect you. But we should make priorities so we have more time than just that. These are some of the thoughts I had while sitting on the bank of the river Ganges. And Ram Navami, which is, it is the eve of tonight, is so important. Krishna tells in the Gita, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo viti tatvata tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mam eti sorjana. That one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and my activities will never take birth again in this world but attain my eternal abode. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir babati bharata abhyutanama dharmasya tadatmanam srijamya. The Lord descends into this world in many ways, in many forms, throughout the ages, to reestablish the essence of spiritual principles according to the time, the place, the language, and the culture. That's why there appears to be differences in different religions. But the essence is one, Sanatana Dharma. In the Treta Yuga, the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, appeared as Lord Rama, along with Sita. In the holy kingdom of Ayodhya, and through Ramayana, this enticing story is all meant to attract our hearts back to his loving service. Very few people are inclined toward philosophy, but people are very much naturally interested in adventure, intrigue, war. Especially children. They love war. It's amazing. Little boys. Almost all the children of our devotees, the boys, when I go to the house, they always have their Hanuman clubs. Playing Hanumanji. Ramayana, such a beautiful story. Such an intriguing story. Romance. I remember I was living in Patna, in Bihar, on the bank of the Ganges River. There was a place called Collectory Ghat. Maybe some of you have been there. And at that time, in 1971, there was a sadhu named Ram Sevak Swami. He was a great devotee of Lord Ram. In his temple, he had deities of Lord Ram and Sita. And he worshipped with great devotion. Every day, a group of sadhus would come for 3 hours to discuss Ramayana. But they spoke in Hindi. And I didn't speak Hindi. I'm ashamed to tell you, I still do not speak good Hindi. My brain is not so good at that. But when I saw how they were, there was about 6 or 7 of them. When they were speaking, sometimes they were at the edge of their seats trembling. Other times they were weeping. Other times they were howling in laughter. There was only one amongst them who spoke English. He was 85 years old, a retired government officer. His name was Narayan Prasad. And I said, please tell me, what are they saying? He said, every day after our katha, I will sit on the bank of Ganga and tell you everything that is spoken. I said, please, please. At the end of the first day, 3 hours of Ram Katha, he told me one story about Krishna, how he stole butter. You know the story of Krishna stealing butter, makhan chaur? It was on the morning of Diwali, and Yashoda Mai was churning butter, and little Krishna, and she was singing songs about Krishna. And as she was singing the songs, her motherly affection was just so great. And that motherly affection woke up Krishna. So he ran to his mother. He wanted to drink the milk from her body. And she said, after I churn. He said, no, no, now. And he put his hand on the churning rod and said, give me milk now. So she picked him up and started feeding him the milk. But then there was milk being cooked on the stove that started boiling over. So she put Krishna down and ran over there. Narayan Prasad was telling me the story. I was enraptured. And Krishna was thinking, why is someone putting other priorities in front of me? I'm going to teach her a good lesson. So he took the pot of yogurt she was churning and took a rock and broke it. And then he went into the next room and climbed up a wooden grinding mortar where he found some butter hanging from a rope, and he started pouring that butter out and eating it and simultaneously feeding it to monkeys. The monkeys were very happy. He was thinking, in my last incarnation as Lord Ramchandra, the monkeys helped me so much to fight against Ravana. Now I must pay them back and express my gratitude. So he was feeding them nice butter. Yashoda Mai came back. She saw a broken pot. She followed the buttery footprints. And there she saw Krishna. And she picked up a stick, little stick. And when Krishna saw her coming, he ran. Jumped off he saw the monkeys all going, chir, 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 running away. And he looked back, and there was Mother Yashoda, and he jumped off and ran. Yashoda was running, he was running. Now who can catch the Supreme Lord? But Krishna wanted to show that the love of his devotee captures him. And she had so many other duties, so to keep him safe from other mischief, she decided to tie around his waist a silk rope. But it was 2 inches too short. So she tied more to it. 2 inches too short. Other gopis started bringing more rope. No matter how many ropes, meters and meters of ropes, his waist did not grow, but it was always 2 inches too short. She was laughing, smiling. She was working really hard to protect her child. Flowers were falling from her hair. She was perspiring. Her sari was becoming loose. And then Krishna, just to satisfy his mother, agreed to be bound, to show the world that the Lord is bound by the love of his devotee. So he told me that story. I said, what else was spoken? He said, that's all. But they were speaking 3 hours. He said, no, that's all we spoke today. The next day, another 3-hour session, Ramayana. And I see their emotions, their tears, their laughter, their suspense. I was so eager to hear. On the bank of the Ganges, he told me the exact same story of Krishna stealing butter. I said, no, tell me more. He said, that's all we spoke. The next day, the third day, same thing. I said, why are you doing this? You're a devotee of Ram. Tell me about Ram. Why do you keep telling me about Krishna? He said, that's all we spoke. I said, I was listening. I did not hear the name Krishna once. I did not hear Yashoda once. I heard Ram, Bharat, Lakshman, Sita, Ravana, all these names, Hanuman. Tell me what was spoken. He said, that's all that was spoken. We only talked about Krishna stealing butter. So I had tears in my eyes. I said, am I so much of an outcast that you won't tell me what you're speaking about? Would you like to know what he said? He said, because I see tears in your eyes, I will tell you. a couple weeks ago, the first day you came to this little temple on the bank of the Ganges, my Guru Maharaj Ram Sevak Swami, that night, he had a dream. Lord Ram appeared to him in a dream and told him that this boy who has just come, I was about 20 years old then, said, this boy is a devotee of Krishna, but he doesn't know it. You should not tell him anything except stories about Krishna. And he will live in Vrindavan someday. But if you tell him these things, he will not accept it. So Narayan Prasad told me, my Guru Maharaj ordered me to only tell you about Krishna. But I'm a devotee of Ram. The only story I know about Krishna correctly is stealing butter. This is the only thing I'm allowed to tell you. But I was warned that you will not believe me. I said, you're right, I don't believe you. But anyways, I was soon to find out the truth. The whole Ram, Krishna, the same one Lord, who appears in different ways according to the time, the place, and the circumstance, and according to his devotees. In Krishna's Leela, the gopas are playing with Krishna. The little cowherd boys are wrestling with Krishna. Yes? And sometimes Krishna allows his friends to beat him in wrestling. How is that? A father with a little child. The child says, I want to wrestle with you. Now the father could pick up that child and just go, yes? But the father will never do that. The child will jump on the father and the father will pretend he's fighting and then he'll get on the ground and he says, no, no, I give up, you win. The child's happy that he won. The father's happy that the child's happy. That's love. So Krishna likes to be beat by the cowherd boys in Vrindavan. But Hanuman, it's a different leela. Can you imagine Hanuman wrestling with Ram? If Hanuman were to go to Vrindavan and see devotees wrestling with Krishna, he would understand, this is beautiful, but it's not for me. So different devotees with different temperaments, the Lord comes to reciprocate with their love. But Bhagavan is one. So the Lord appears in Ayodhya on this ninth day of the waxing moon. To perform such beautiful pastimes and give such perfect lessons to give us wisdom through his words, through his actions, and through those of his devotees in such an exciting, intriguing manner, and simply by being absorbed, our love naturally awakens. I wish you all a very happy Ram Navami tomorrow. And I'm sorry if I took up too much of your time. But I'm very grateful to have this opportunity. Thank you very much.
Swamiji till 9:10 o'clock. If anybody has any special unusual questions, please feel free, because he's come here to answer questions that might, you know, be in your head, from children to the adults. Anybody?
Swati Ben, you always have questions.
Well, Reverend Radharath Maharaj, thank you for coming. You said that we all need to set our priorities and never be complacent in life to achieve our goals. And I was thinking how much we worry about our past and how much we analyze what we will do tomorrow and never realize this precious present that we live in. You made us realize how precious our present is in this divine path, which is invisible. And thank you for bringing us one step closer to that divine path as we continue in our journey, sitting on the same rock, looking at the hawk that we don't need to grab by. Thank you very much. And thank you for coming and seeking your blessings.
Thank you.
We all invite you to have some prasad upstairs, please, which will be served down.
Fabulous, huh?
I know, he's always good, a delight to listen to. Come, let's go meet him.
Please don't leave without prasad. It's upstairs. His lovely pizzas from the Radha Krishna Mandir.